All the Rage with John Bowd on www.traxfm.org.
Hello again, listeners. Welcome to All the Rage. And this week I have another guest to talk about another issue. Hello, sir. Please introduce yourself.
Hi. Hello. This is Carles Suarez. I'm the director of the Catalan National Assembly England office. Thank you for inviting me to the show. I've been living in London for the past 10 years, and it's really interesting to have a conversation with you guys on this challenging subject that is Catalonia.
Thank you. You're very welcome. Okay, so yes, we are discussing the issue of Catalonia, a region of Spain, which has for many years been involved in independence arguments, struggles, etc. Could you just, to begin, could you tell us a little bit about where this struggle comes from, why it's emerged, and effectively why do so many people in the Catalan region want independence from Spain?
So the struggle has, it's many centuries old. Catalonia is one of the oldest nations in Europe, one with its own particular language, culture, history, economic dynamics, etc., but one without state. So there's always been a challenge between Catalonia and the central government in Spain, in Madrid, and that's been happening, to be honest, since Spain was founded in the 15th century. It's mostly since the rise of nationalities and the idea of the nation state, it increased the challenge in the last 300 years. And we could say that there's been this tendency from Spain to try to centralize all the forms of government in order to benefit Madrid in expense of the peripheries of Spain, including Catalonia. And there's always been conflict in terms of, for example, the using Catalan in education, the ability to defend Catalan culture, etc. This has been ongoing mostly on a stable basis for the last 100 years, but it is in times of economic depressions and recessions that the issue really comes to face of the earth. And that is mainly because one of the main issues is the economical issue. For each pound that is paid in taxes by Catalan people, only 70p come back in form of central government investment. And when the economy goes all right, this 30% deficit is okay, it's manageable, but it's in times of recession that you really think, wait, why are we losing 30p for each pound and sending money over there? And at the same time, we have to close hospitals and schools, etc. So it's there is a reason it has increased the challenge and the issue in these past 10 years since the economic crash, the recession, and the following austerity. As it also happened, it also came to the headlines in the 1930s after the 1929 the economic crisis. So that's where we are right now. It's this coincidence in time of both the will to be independent and be in its own country, and at the same time to recover the resources, recover the power, and ensure that there is enough funding to implement and safeguard the welfare state, the public sector, reverse austerity, etc.
Okay, so there's very much a kind of economic, perhaps a similar situation to this country where we have heavy austerity, but the response in the Catalan region is to say, well, you know, we're not putting up with this because we pay what we pay and we want a decent return, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. We could definitely find parallels here in some areas that have been in poverty since the deindustrialization and the globalization, and that they may be finding Brexit and the recovery of the national sovereignty as a mean to recover its industry, etc., or in other social movements across Europe that happened, like, for example, in Greece with Syriza and other places. Yeah, there are some parallels, yeah.
Yeah. So specifically, where does this desire, because you mentioned culture and I would define some of what you said as it sounds as if Catalan feels as if much of the rest of Spain is suppressing their culture. Can you give us a bit more detail about that? Why do they feel like, and how long has that sentiment been in existence?
Well, it's not that much of a feeling or sentiment, but it's a real fact. Let's not forget that after the Second World War, when democracy and communism finally finished fascism in Europe, there was this one country where a fascist regime was kept for the following 40 years, and that country is Spain. And from 1936 to 1978, Catalan was forbidden at all levels of public administration, at schools, TV, communications, radio, etc. So this has always been this tension. There is this feeling in Madrid that they think that in order for Spain to survive, they have to eliminate any other language, any other culture, as if it was a danger to their own existence, as if they couldn't coexist together, as if the Spanish project was only to survive if the identity, the national identities of Catalonia, the Basque Country, or Galicia were to disappear.
So, does this have a particular political side, perhaps more than one than the other? Would Catalan independence be more of a left wing thing or a right wing thing, a centrist thing?
Well, right now, since there is this combination of both cultural and economic issues, there is support for Catalan independence from both left wing to the even right liberals. So it's quite spread across the whole political spectrum. But of course, historically, Catalonia was always on the Republican side during the Spanish Civil War against fascism. And there's always been this pro-independence, anti-fascism combination. You wouldn't never find a fascist which is also pro-independence, while a Spanish nationalism has always been on the far right. They even do, even today, nowadays, the Hitler signs and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we saw some of that during the protests. We'll get to the protests in particular, but yeah, I'm interested in that because I did note in something I was reading about ties to the republicanism of 80 years ago. In fact, one article in particular I was reading at Jacobin, which talked about how some people still see it as being directly tied. The independence would be directly tied to the republicanism of 80 years ago. And maybe that's not for everyone, but do you think there's some correct truth in that? Or?
Oh, definitely. The mindset, if you read now, even today, George Orwell's Homage to Catalonia and his explanation of what he found there and the equilibrium between Catalanism and socialism, you can still find it there in the Catalan mindset today. And the main reason for the popular support for independence is the thought that there will be advances in the welfare state, there will be a reverse to austerity. So even today, there is a progressist narrative behind the whole independence movement.
So it has a connection to the wider left wing in Spain, I take it?
Well, again, the problem with the left wing in Spain is that it's very... they position themselves always with other similar issues, like in other countries, like in Sahara or in Palestine, but they are very slow in reacting and support the Catalan case. It's a bit like the British left wing in the 19th century, which were supporting many progressive movements around the world, except for the Irish one.
Yeah, yes. What would be, if you can sort of sum it up, what would be the general arguments against Catalan independence? What's the most kind of commonly heard ones?
Well, the main one, and the one that they keep repeating and using, is that it's illegal, it's unconstitutional, because the Constitution does not cover the right of self-determination. So, and that's where we are stuck, to be honest, because that constitution was done in 1978. That was only 3 years after the death of the fascist General Franco, and that was only 3 years before a coup d'etat from the military police, the Guardia Civil, in 1981. So in that scenario, a constitution was made from the ashes of the old regime, and they ensure that this new constitution, although it is true that it provided some welfare and some advances from the fascist regime, it was very clear in that there would be no self-determination right for any of the regions in Spain. So basically, the main narrative against independence is it's illegal. If you want independence first, you have to change the constitution. But then in order to change the constitution, you require two-thirds of the Spanish parliament. So it's a catch-22, because a demographic minority will never be able to change the Spanish constitution.
Mm. Interesting. I was talking to some Spanish friends of mine, and I said, "Hey, you know, have you got any questions on this? Out of interest." And one of them did say, "Well, firstly, he put to me that all official polls concerning independence show a slight majority against it. Is that correct? Or
let's put it this way." If that was true, Spain would have already conceded and accepted a referendum.
Right. Yeah, we're going to...
What's the reason of avoiding the issue? What's the reason of disallowing a referendum? What's the reason of sending military policemen to beat voters if they are so confident that they would be in a democratic and free vote?
Yeah. Because, one of the, I wanted to put this to you because one of the arguments I have found is that those against Catalan independence often say, well, the government unilaterally declared independence from Spain. It was based on the result of a referendum that was considered illegal in some parts and didn't follow recognised international hallmarks. I mean, firstly, how much of that is true? How much of it is false? And secondly, how much does the opposition benefit, whether true or false, from that narrative?
Well, the opposition benefits a lot because on one side they say there is no majority for independence, but on the other they forbid the ability to vote and see if that's actually true. So there is no way to get out of there.
Mm. So, I mean, the fact is they're not going to allow a vote because they don't think they're going to get the result they want. Would that be with the position you would take?
Well, I think that common sense says that if they were confident that they would win and if they are so sure that the polls say there's a majority of no independence, they would win. They would have already put that into a boat, but they are scared of the boat. They sent police to stop the boat. They do not want a boat. They do not want to find out what the majority actually thinks. And just to point out another point, so although the anti-independence section of the population did not go to vote to the polling stations on the referendum day, if you count only the yes votes over the total census, you will find there is actually more votes than the one in the Brexit vote. There was more people voting for independence out of the total population in Catalonia than more people that voted for Brexit out of the total population of the United Kingdom.
Oh, interesting. Well, on that note, I think that's a good place to bridge into so the actual events whereby Catalan independence and the fight for it came into, I think, a wider international public consciousness. I think we could say would be the referendum of late 2017, remember rightly. So do you think you could give the listeners a little bit of detail, for those that aren't familiar with it, just tell us a little bit about what happened in the lead up to that referendum, what happened during the referendum, and of course the aftermath.
Well, the referendum, there was a mandate since the last Catalan regional elections to organize a referendum. This had been ongoing for the past years, like in mass demonstrations on the streets, in grassroots movements, even doing symbolic referendums in different towns and villages across the years. And finally, a couple of parties, three in total, went to the elections with that point in their manifesto. And those three parties won the majority of the seats. And then they called for a referendum. First of all, they tried to negotiate one with Spain. But as I said earlier, the answer from Spain was always the same. It doesn't fit in the constitutional framework. Hence, it's illegal. We will never allow a referendum. But the Catalan government nevertheless went ahead with it. And that happened on the 1st of October 2017. And what happened there, and like half the population of the world was able to see, was that Spain sent the paramilitary police to stop the vote, and they started collecting the ballot boxes where they could, hitting the people, punishing them, and lots of violence across that day. There were around 1,000 people injured and around 700,000 people that were not able to go to vote because the Spanish police had decommissioned the polls. Nevertheless, there was 90% of the vote in favor of independence. As I said earlier, the proportion of affirmative votes over the census was superior to the actual Brexit vote. And Catalonia, the Catalan government, gathered the mandate of the referendum and unilaterally declared independence on the 27th of October. However, the government and the leadership of the movement at that time seemed they did the analysis that they were not able to not only proclaim but also to defend the independence, and instead of calling the people to the streets to defend the proclamation, organizing a general strike, trying to collect taxes from their own, etc., what happened a bit is a bit of a mess. And half of the Catalan government fled to Belgium, and the other half was arrested on the following days by Spanish police. And basically, the independence was stalled. Madrid took control of the Catalan government and dissolved the Catalan parliament. And now the Catalan government is pending a trial, and they're going to be on trial starting next week on next Tuesday, and basically going on to trial facing the charges of rebellion, which amount up to 30 years prison, just because they organized a referendum. So that's in a nutshell more or less what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested in quite a few things there. One is that they're saying that there's no constitutional basis for holding a Catalan independence referendum. Being a constitution being what they are, and with my very brief reading of world history, they don't seem to change very often. Is that something that perhaps Spain's wider government could basically put up for forever, technically, and just say, well, there's no basis for it, so we're not doing it?
So in order to change the constitution, you require 2/3 of the Spanish parliament to accept it, then go to a referendum in the whole of Spain to vote it, then dissolve the parliament, call new elections, and the new parliament also approve the changes by 2/3. So unless there is a real political will to do so from the Spanish parties, there is no way that a demographic minority, which is only 15% of the population of Spain, is able to change the constitution.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk to certain examples of comparison with Brexit, because it kind of reminds me of that a little bit in regards sort of a second referendum and things like that, where, you know, obviously some people want it very, very deeply, but they, contrary to some of the reporting we get in the media, they don't actually constitute enough to gain a second one. Equally, I don't think there's enough people who support no deal either, but that's another week. We're not talking about Brexit, but interesting examples. So I want to talk a little bit about Catalan culture and differences. How does it, I know this is a big question, so you know, just kind of focus on a couple of things, but how would Catalonian culture, however you choose to define culture, how would it differ specifically from Spanish? And is there any particular, is there just kind of a general aspect within Spain, certainly under the likes of Franco, to kind of suppress anything that was a bit different? Or is there something that the rest of Spain, for some reason, finds particularly threatening in Catalan independence?
Well, that's a very good question, and it's worth a proper assessment to the Spanish population. What's actually, what makes them fear of another culture? But to answer your question in particular, the main difference would be the language, because it's not a dialect of Spanish or anything like that. It's a proper different language, as it would be French or Italian. And that's the main cultural difference, which is because it's been for generations and generations speaking in different language, and it has its own traditions. I would just like to give you an example that's also in the news every now and then. So a main item of Spanish culture would be bullfighting. That's never been the case in Catalonia, and it's actually been forbidden in Catalonia for the last 20 years to kill, torture and kill animals in public, while it still happens in the rest of Spain.
Mm. Yeah, that's always an interesting example, that one, actually. Yeah, okay, thanks for that. On the other side, on the flip side of this, again, talking to some of my friends who perhaps feel when they visited friends in the Catalan region, they feel a little bit unwelcome sometimes. Is there a basis for that kind of sentiment, or is that perhaps just individuals feeling that way, or is there any? Is
there any, like Spanish people or like English?
Yes.
People
going there? Yeah, no, Spanish people who feel as if they're being made to feel unwelcome. I mean, is there a wider cultural movement towards that, or are we just talking about isolated?
Not at all. And actually, like, it's very common, and you can see that in Barcelona as a tourist any day, that if someone speaks to another one in Catalan and the other answers in Spanish, the Catalan person will always change to Spanish to have a proper conversation and avoid any kind of conflict. So that's not the case unless you are a bit biased and you go there already with the assumption that something will happen and you are provocative and something. But otherwise, I mean, just let's not forget that half of the Catalan population has come from, even my grandfather, he came from Asturias, mining area of the north of Spain, and about half of the Catalan population comes from the rest of Spain, and they've been integrated there, and there's been no issues from that side.
So there's no chance of, say, this is a question for all cultures. Particularly, I'm thinking of the country we're sitting in now, where sometimes certain emotional sentiments can be hijacked by, you know, bigoted politicians who have their own agenda. Is there any chance of that happening, or has it ever happened, or has the kind of wider movement ever had an attempted figurehead emerge who's actually not someone they like very much and just said, like, no, mate, you don't represent Catalonia, we don't want anything to do with you?
I mean, Barcelona is one of the most progressive left-leaning cities in the world. It's very welcoming to immigrants. It has it's been very open to, like, for example, Syrian refugees, as in the past it was with the Bosnian conflict in the 90s. Mm. For example, all official communications in Barcelona are done in Catalan, in Spanish, in Arabic, in Amazigh, and in different languages. So, I mean, come on, Barcelona, anyone that goes to Barcelona knows that it's one of the most open cities in the world. There is, of course, due to the political conflict, a lot of lies and fake news from the Spanish press, but it only takes a few hours in Barcelona to know that it's one of the most open cities in the world.
Yes, I it's on my list, actually. I'm ashamed to admit I haven't actually made it there yet. I'm going to. Well, I was actually going to go when the event, when the referendum thing was taking place, but unfortunately a family issue meant that I couldn't make it.
We'll have more chances to make history there that you can come over.
I look forward to viewing them. Speaking of Barcelona, but also of the wider political movement over there, as far as kind of shining more support or shining a brighter light, if you like, on Catalan independence, has there been any benefit in the last few years from anything to do with Podemos or the 15M movement, the Indignados, all that kind of stuff? Has that linked in? Is that part of a wider thing that perhaps many people who also support Catalan independence are supportive of themselves?
No, definitely. I mean, when I was referring now for Barcelona, for example, the mayor of Barcelona is Ada Colau, which used to be an Indignados leader, used to be in the squatting movement and always been linked with the social movements. So there are quite differences in the narrative between the Indignados movement and the Catalan independence, but they are both born in an era of depression and austerity. They are both led from the young generations. They are both grassroots movements, and they both want to change the system. One movement is probably more inclined, or it was when it was born a few years ago, the Indignados movement, to replace the political establishment and create a very important political group that would change the system, while the other movement has basically focused on, well, it's just too impossible to change Spain. Let's at least ensure that now that we have the momentum, let's at least gain independence now. But there are many, many links between them, both historically, politically, and even in terms of the social support. Many of the people that were in the street in the 15M were also in the streets on the referendum day.
And so where would you, I'm not quite sure where you want to answer this, if just your personal view, if you're happy to give that, or for the wider organisation that you're involved with. But is there anything that could change within the Spanish system that would make yourself or some other, maybe not everyone, but some Catalans say, actually, yeah, okay, we'll stick with Spain if you do this or this? You know, would you be happy to kind of stay united with them in any way?
Well, the organization that I represent was born with the single objective to gain independence, so there wouldn't be any case for that. And on a personal level, of course, I mean, if you grant me a Spanish republic that allows self-determination, that nationalizes means of production and everything, I'll be the first one to defend the new regime. But again, we are back where we were. There is no chance in the near future, or even in the long term, to see that there is any chance to have that. If you see the sociological movements right now, the polls across Spain, or the elections in Andalusia a few months ago, it's actually going the other way around. There's this new right-wing semi-fascist party called Vox, which is now rating at 10-15%. So, and add this new party to the Partido Popular, which was the party in power during the referendum day that sent the police, another right-wing party that's called Ciudadanos, which tries to represent themselves like the liberals, like Macron, but again, it's nothing more than very right-wing. And add to that the Socialist Party, that unlike Corbyn, actually is actually also defends national unity, is against self-determination, etc. So there is maybe in the whole of Spain around 10-15 maximum 20% of support, not for independence but just for self-determination. That to think that in the near future, with them controlling the mass media, all the TVs, etc., and we've seen the current correlation, correlation of forces, and the political trends. I think we would be talking about many generations before a massive change like this, or another economic crisis.
Yeah. Is there any other independence movements around the world? Pick anywhere you like that you've seen or noted where you think, oh, that's a good move, or that would work, or we'd like the devolution that they've got from central government, or anything like that. Is there anything you've seen that inspires you or the movement?
Well, I mean, it was very helpful, to be honest, in the whole debate, the Scottish referendum, because it happened in 2014, which was when the Catalan independence movement was gaining strength and very strong. And the fact that they could reach a deal between the Scottish and the British government to accept the referendum was actually, okay, let's try to do that. But then again, Spain is not the UK. Spain is just a flawed democracy after nearly a century of either monarchy or fascism dictatorship, and they would never accept that. And that's from one side. And on the other, probably David Cameron saw the polls and said, okay, we're going to win it, I'm going to risk it. And maybe Spain is seeing the polls, and that's the reason why they don't want to risk it.
Yeah. Mm. So what exactly does Catalonian independence look like? Where does it? I'm thinking of some of the things you've talked about. Just if you could just specify them a little bit more. So regional control, more democratic involvement. What does citizenship look like under an independent Catalan?
Well, to be honest, since the independence movement is so big in the sense of it covers both left-wing and liberals, etc., the only common agenda is to implement Republican civility, responsibility, etc. But there is many differences in their manifesto in the sense of how they imagine an independent country would be. So there isn't a single project of we want independence to do this or we want independence to do that. The point is we want democratic process from Spain. Spain will never allow a democratic process, hence the priority is to become independent, and once independent we'll decide if we are going to be more left-wing or we'll allow some kind of privatizations, etc., etc. But it is true that right now the independence movement is aligned in the sense of independence will allow more social services, independence will allow more welfare state, and even from the private sector, and that's one of the reasons some of the liberal sectors are also pro-independence, they see the independence as an opportunity to reduce taxes, as an opportunity to invest in the Barcelona airport, Barcelona port, and the investment in energy and other areas. So all in all, it's an objective and rational benefit out of independence. And then there will be the second battle of where do we spend those funds? How do we apply it? Is it going to be in the interest mostly for the population or in the interest mostly for the private sector? But that's another battle.
Yeah, I mean, it's those sort of battles that always concern me a little, because I've seen similar things of, you know, people's calls for freedom and self-determination, and then they don't work out because people weren't, to be honest, people weren't really ready. And I would hope to, you know, that there would be a sense among, you know, Catalan independence, if it did, I know it's not going to come tomorrow, but if it did come tomorrow, they would be ready to kind of take that control rather than, it turn into, you know, private. I mean, I'm thinking again, going back to Brexit, you know, there is obviously some a great deal of desire from much of the side that funded this referendum and all of its results to make Britain a place that has even less worker rights, worker control of your own destiny, you know, to basically destroy our trade unions and stuff like that. I mean, Dave and I are both trade union reps, so we're quite, you know, heavy on this sort of stuff. I would hope that wouldn't, you know, similar thing wouldn't happen in Catalonia.
I mean, the thing is, the challenge to separate from Spain is so big, the repression so profound, that we cannot go there with a communist manifesto and only try to appeal to 20% of the population. There sure. needs to be a proper national front narrative that's able to win also the middle class on board and ensure that the benefits of independence are explained across the board. But that said, of course, once independent, the power of the establishment will be lower than it is now, and hence the ability to make profound changes in society will increase. And coming back to Brexit, there is many similarities, as we are just seeing now. And there is, of course, the agenda from the right-wing conservative to use Brexit to make austerity permanent and decrease salaries, etc., etc. But that shouldn't be a reason to stop Brexit. We cannot say we only want Brexit if certain economic policy conditions happen. The people voted. There was a democratic result. There is a democratic mandate, and that has to be applied. Once that happens, let's go to elections, and if a left-wing manifesto wins, let's support it.
Yeah. Interesting, you know, much of the argument at the moment I hear seems to be kind of got those two things the other way around, which is let's have a general election first and then sort out Brexit. Is there any party in Spain right now, and forgive me for not being up on every aspect of them, where they are guaranteeing I don't know, would you call it a second referendum after the one that happened last year? Because, I mean, some sides of it don't even recognise that as a referendum. I don't know if you'd call it a second one. Are there any parties that are willing to put themselves out on the line there and go, yeah, we will have a proper, full, constitutional Catalan referendum vote?
Exactly. So there is no talks of a second referendum because they wouldn't even recognise the first one. Yeah. Not only not recognising, but the organisers are either in jail or in exile. So there is no chance of a second referendum. There is one party, which is Podemos, which does defend a democratic solution in form of a referendum for Catalonia. But again, they've never been over 20% of the polls, and it doesn't seem that they are going to do that in the next 5, 10, 20 years, to be honest.
Mm. So, I was just interested in slightly off the subject here, but we did mention the Indignados movement. Do you know, is there anything in particular you can tell us just a little bit of a summing up about that? Because again, I think it's something that we've seen a bit of in the international media, but not you know, that much to be able to define it properly. Is there anything you can tell us about that?
Well, there is also another similarity between the Catalan independence movement and the Indignados. We said earlier that the Catalan independence movement was very strong, grassroots-led, etc. But when the day of the implementation of the referendum mandate had to come, it was the Catalan leadership that got scared, and they either fled away or they got themselves arrested. In terms of the Indignados, it's not exactly like that, but similar in the sense that it was very strong, there was a lot of popular support, and then this all this energy was channeled politically through a party, which is Podemos, which is okay, because you get to get into the institutions, and you're able to do the debates there, etc., etc. But the consequence of that was that the grassroots movement decreased, there are no more people in the streets, there are just, instead of activists and revolutionaries, now all we want is voters and members of the party. So in a sense, Podemos itself has also become a bit part part of the establishment in that sense. And while they still defend some of the some very good points in the manifesto, like, for example, making an audit of all the debts that the Spanish state took that led to the crisis, or even still today defending a referendum for Catalonia, the truth is that they've lost this energy, this spark, and that's one of the reasons that a right-wing party like Vox, which is fascist, is now increasing, because they are able to do a very biased and based on fake news and fake information, but radical narrative, like Trump did in the US. Actually, yeah. Bannon is actually helping Vox in the media campaigns and all that. And basically, they've covered the gap that Podemos left once it became just another party and left the mobilizations and the streets behind.
Mm. Yeah, the slow death of radicalism never actually helps our movements, does it? I read a little bit also about suggestions of federalism in regards Catalonia's relationship with the west of Spain. Do you think there's any mileage in that argument? Would it work?
Well, I know that the Catalan conservative sectors and the private sector would like that idea. And it depends on what you call federalism, because depending on how you define it, you could say that the current regional structure of Spain is quite federal in a bit. But this doesn't solve the structural issues in terms of economics, in terms of culture, in terms of having the ability, the democratic right to decide what you want to be. So any federalism that does not ensure, that does not safeguard self-determination, it just Spanish... more of the same business as usual, 2.0, 3.0, 4.0, etc.
Yeah, it wouldn't really give you the change you're looking for.
No.
What kind of feeling is there towards, you mentioned some of the leaders of the movement that have gone into exile. Again, when that was kind of reported in the international press, I think everyone got very overexcited about the individual factors of these leaders, you know, fleeing and all this kind of stuff. What's the feeling among Catalan society towards those who have gone into exile? Is supportive, or does anyone feel let down by it? They're not very happy with it. What kind of thing?
I mean, of course, there is the sympathy, because at the end of the day, it was like a David and Goliath fight, or like a Tom and Jerry, if you wish. And everyone could tell what was coming, the levels of oppression. Everyone remembers 40 years of a Franco dictatorship. And just to put an example, out of the last 10 Catalan presidents, 9 of them have either been in prison, in exile, or killed by Spanish government. So everyone could see what was coming, and then it's normal to have some sympathy with the leaders that left, and they've even had some good legal battles that they fought in the extradition process in Germany, in Scotland, in Belgium, which has also helped to put Spain across the world as not a real democracy, and the undemocratic use of the judicial system, etc., etc. All this is true, but having said that, if you declare independence, you have to defend it. Otherwise, there's no point in declaring at all. And actually, the Carles Puigdemont, which was the president, when he talks to foreign press and he's asked what's the big mistake that you did, is actually not having declared it earlier, a few days earlier, when there was the momentum and all the international press behind, and not defending it. So even he recognizes that was a mistake. And for us, for the pro-independence field, it was a clear mistake, because, again, Spain will never accept a democratic solution. Hence, the only way to become independent is to use a unilateral strategy, and you have to go through the phase of proclaiming independence. That was done. Good, but you can't stop there. You have to design the whole process from a declaration of independence to the actual independence. How do you collect your taxes? How do you organize your territory? How do you gain control of the territory? There's still the Spanish army inside the country. There's still the Spanish police. What do you do? Do you put the Catalan police under your control? Do you create voluntary corps? There was no design whatsoever of this transitional period, and that was one of the reasons they just got scared. Probably they never thought that they would go so far, that far. They probably thought that Spain would be able to dismantle the referendum on the days before or in the same day. They didn't anticipate the reaction of the people defending the poll stations, the massive vote in pro-independence, and basically from the referendum day on the 1st of October to the proclamation day on the 27th, it was a bit of improvisation from the leadership. And when they proclaimed, you could see in their faces that it wasn't for real. The Spanish flag was never taken out of the Catalan government building. And on the independence was proclaimed on a Friday, and on the next working day, on Monday, the president had already gone.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's those kind of practicalities are the sort of thing I'm always interested in. So, you know, would an independent Catalan have its, presumably would have its own police force, as you sort of mentioned there, would its own armed forces? Would it have that kind of thing? And therefore, would it have defined borders, and what would those borders look like in a practical sense?
Well, the borders theoretically should be the same as the current region, like the ones that vote for the Catalan parliament. And there is a Catalan police, which are the ones that were active during the terrorist attack in August 17 in the Ramblas. But when independence was proclaimed, there was no decree of putting the police at the orders of the president. There was nothing done at all. Like, there was never the intention to implement independence. And that's one of the reasons that we lost that window of opportunity. And we just hope that if we ever get another chance and we are able to put independence to a vote, and we go as far as proclaiming independence, next time we'll be able to at least try to defend it on the streets, street by street.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, very much makes me think of, as you mentioned earlier, on some of the writings of George Orwell. I remember some of what he wrote about. Yeah, also, I mean, it also made me just think of, it's a bit like post-war Iraq, where, you know, the ideology be damned, the people who are going to be supported are the ones who keep the water switched on, you know. So there's those kind of practicalities. Okay, I just wanted to
discuss. I mean, in a process like that, unless there is an agreement, like in Scotland and the UK or something like that, there will always be a transition period. There would always be a power duality, as Lenin theorized. And when the Bolsheviks took control in October 17, but of the previous century, they just controlled a couple of cities. But then they took control of the territory, and during months there were two governments. So basically, that's the transition period. It's probably the most difficult in an independence process where there is no agreement from the state that you want to separate from. And I guess that the Catalan political leadership was so exhausted just for the exercise of the referendum that there was no energy left, no plans left of, okay, now let's try to design and implement a transitional period. And they just thought, okay, we cannot do that. White flag, let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, just quickly, as we'll sort of start to close up now, but how does the movement connect with, what's international solidarity been like? Has it been good? And also, does it connect to kind of a wider international anti-fascism movement? because of course it was a London anti-fascist event where you and I met. Is that something you do as a personal thing, or is it also part of Catalan independence? You're an anti-fascist because of it, or as well as it?
Well, definitely. We Catalans abroad are involved in many social movements where we are based now, and of course the vast majority is anti-fascist. So that's where we met, in the demonstration in London. I wasn't there by myself. So as the Catalan National Assembly, we actually called to go there. And it's actually like the third demonstration that we were supporting and going there with our banners and all. It's also not only like a case in London. There was the other day on the anniversary of the death of Rosa Luxemburg in Berlin, a massive anti-fascist demonstration, and the Catalan independence movement was also took part of there, supporting, etc. So yeah, it works both ways. Catalans abroad defend anti-racist and anti-fascist movements where they are, and the big part of solidarity has come through also anti-fascist or left-wing channels, similar to what happened 8 years ago during the Spanish Civil War. Let's not forget that the Spanish Civil War, it's the war with the most volunteers ever to go to another country and fight because they want, without being told to do so, and volunteering to go. So there's always been this link. In terms of support, we've gained support from all kinds, definitely from social movements like anti-fascist movement, etc., but also from countries and liberal parties like in Scandinavia, Denmark, etc., where they think that self-determination is a basic human right and they just can't understand why Spain is acting this way, terrorizing voters instead of allowing a vote, or also from like, let's put it this way, the enemies of my enemies are my friends. So, for example, we've got support even from the sections of the Conservative Party in the UK that are pro-Gibraltar, because they also, it's on their interest to diminish Spain's position in the world. Also, there's been support from South America, because, of course, the whole region was also at some point colonized by Spain and they gained their independence. And actually, Venezuela's president, Maduro, is one of the few that's actually positioned himself openly in favor of Catalan independence. Even yesterday, to the press, he said that if the countries started to recognize the coup d'etat leader as a new president and giving him ultimatums, he would be giving ultimatums to the EU to recognize Catalan independence. So it's been a bit of support across the board for different interests, different strategies. But to be honest, we are so little against the monster we have to fight that we do accept all the supports that we need.
Yeah, there was we covered Venezuela on the show recently, actually. Another interesting interview. It's that doesn't surprise me that there was support there. So they it's funny when you say all this, it just feels to me like history in action, if you know what I mean. There's so much that's things that have happened a long time ago that are coming right back to where we are now.
Yeah. I mean, we can see like parallels with the Bolshevik Revolution, with the Spanish Civil War, with Brexit, with Venezuela.
Historical echoes, perhaps.
Yeah.
So going forward, you mentioned that the trial has begun of some of the leaders, and what kind of responses are people looking to? I mean, is there scenarios here? So are we looking for protests about these happening? Is there rejection of the idea that they should even be on trial, or are we waiting for a verdict and then decide where you're going to go next sort of thing?
So the trial will begin next Tuesday, 12th of February. The trial is for the causes of rebellion. 13 people, which is nearly all the Catalan government and the speaker of the Catalan parliament will be on trial. Now, in terms of what we're doing here, on the very same first day of the trial, on the 12th, there is a demonstration in Downing Street to ask for the intervention of the British government and at least to make them aware what's happening and try to get them involved. There was also the other day an early day motion in the British Parliament to demand the intervention of the British government. So that's kind of aligned in the sense of what we are trying to is getting the British government involved. The demonstration is organized by the Catalan National Assembly, and there's also in support of the all-party parliamentarian group on Catalonia and a couple of other organizations, and there will be speeches from SNP MPs, Sinn Féin MPs, even a Labour MP, etc., and also some academics. So you are more than welcome to come and join us. And that's next Tuesday at 7 p.m. at Downing Street.
Okay. Well, seven, I might actually be able to make that one if it's at 7 p.m. So what does what would British intervention on this issue look like, though, if you say, what's the demonstration? What exactly are you calling for Downing Street to do?
Well, at least to express publicly that you can't go and tell Venezuela that the elections are unfair because there are political prisoners. But then here in Europe, in the heart of Europe, in the place where fascism was won 70 years ago, now you're allowing a country to have political prisoners, and you're allowing a country to send paramilitary police to kick voters. So basically, at least what we're trying to gain is the attraction of the government. Because it's not just a question of this particular trial and them getting involved here and now. As we said earlier, Spain will never accept a democratic solution, so the only way would be to unilaterally declare it and defend it. But then again, Spain has an army and we don't. So at the end of the day, it will depend on international intervention. So what we have to create is the conditions like Maidan Square in Ukraine or the Tahrir Square in Egypt, and create the momentum in order that political forces from the outside actually come and intervene, and someone calls the Spanish Prime Minister and says, you either stop that, you either allow them a binding referendum, or you're going to be kicked out of the EU. And until we create the tension inside and the complicities and support outside, we'll never get to that point. So this particular demonstration is just one step into that direction.
So just in closing, what kind of thing would you like to see as international support? So again, sort of speaking as a trade unionist, you know, representing the Communication Workers Union, where would there be anything you would ask us to take part in, or insofar as solidarity is concerned, what would that look like?
Well, in an ideal world, on the first day of a trial, apart from the demonstration, there is actually also a general strike called in Catalonia. So in an ideal world where trade unions were still strong and there was international solidarity, etc., there would be a global protest on that day, but we are far from reaching that, I'm afraid, and not only from a Catalan perspective, but in all the problems in the world perspective. So, but yeah, that's at the end of the day, what impacts really, what creates changes are the impacts to the economy, and there's nothing that impacts more the economy as a strike. So strike is still the main item that we have that we can use both in Catalonia and across the world to change society. Because then at the end of the day, if we are here, is to change stuff, right?
Yeah, the withdrawal of Labour still remains the fundamentalist tool of the working class.
Exactly.
And probably until the foreseeable future always will.
Exactly.
That's grand. Okay, well, that's extremely informative. And I thank you very much for your time. It just remains for me to say to you, Carlos Suarez, gracias for being on All the Rage, and solidarity, mate.
Gracias.
All the Rage with John Bowd. On www.traxfm.org.